Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Working Triathlete podcast. Today, we have Coach Derek Owens on the podcast with WT athlete James Bilbrey, who just won 70.3 St. George. He won the amateur race there, which is an amazing accomplishment. And I'll let his coach, Derek Owens, introduce him.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Conrad. Yeah, really excited to be here talking to James. James and I actually started working together basically 2 years ago now. I think it was 2 years ago tomorrow, May 9th, that we started working together. But yeah, over the course of those 2 years, I've just seen a huge amount of improvement from James, up to the point of him taking the overall win at St. George on Saturday. So yeah, just really excited to have James here to chat through everything from his athletic history, the training block last year that led us to this success that we saw at St. George on Saturday. But yeah, James, want to give you a little bit of time to tell everybody a little bit about yourself. Why don't you start with just your personal background, athletically, where you came from like the youth perspective up through high school, college, and then what led you to the sport of triathlon?
Okay. Yeah, James. I grew up swimming, started around age five. Swam all the way through high school and then went to college at went to West Point and I swam there as well. But yeah, that was the only background I had in terms of any sports was just swimming. But yeah, what got me into triathlon was my sister, actually. When I graduated and was done swimming, she signed up for 70.3 and she was like, "Hey, you'd probably be pretty good at this." And I was like, "All right, I'll give it a shot." Because I was definitely missing like competing and honestly just like having something to work towards. Kind of felt a little lost after I was done swimming. And yeah, that kind of got the fire under me again and got back to training. And here we are now. So
awesome. Yeah. And I know that your sister is not the only other family member that you have that is involved in the sport of triathlon. I've frequently searched for James Bilbrey on the Ironman tracker and seen two of them pop up. Can you share a little bit about how your family's involvement, your sister and your father as well, has shaped your just perspective on racing in the sport?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's totally awesome to be able to have family members that have, you know, the same interests as you. You know, it's awesome, like going home and I can go and train with my sister, or like brother-in-law or my dad. And then it's also always fun, like having them at the races and seeing them out on the course. So yeah, it's honestly, it's awesome. Like having family that's also invested in the sport.
Cool. Yeah. Well, so I looked back and I was looking at all the past race results that I at least, like had access to, and it seems like 2021 70.3 Waco was the first time that you raced. Is that right?
Yeah. That was the first triathlon I did. So
yeah. And, like back then I was looking at it, you went 5:24, swam, somewhere in the 25 range, which is kind of where you've been swimming at most of your races, given your swim background. Then rode a 245 or 246 off the bike, or rode a 245 or 246, and then ran like a 158 off the bike. And that was before we started working together. And then I guess that just gave you a little bit of that spark that made you feel excited about being a little bit more competitive. And then is that kind of the point when you decided to start thinking about this more seriously? Like what was your reaction finishing that first race, and how'd you go about training for your first 70.3?
The training was very unstructured. I think I swam maybe, I don't know, two or three times before the race, you know, since I had graduated and stopped swimming. So probably only two or three times over the course of like 9 or 10 months. And then I was literally just doing whatever I felt like any day. So like felt like going for a bike ride, I'd just go for a bike ride. Felt like running, I would just go and run. No structure in terms of like speed workouts or anything. Didn't have anything to read like power outputs. So I was just really just going with the flow. But yeah, Waco was, it was a great experience. I think one of the things I liked a lot about it was kind of just the people. Like everyone at the races was just so helpful because I really had no clue what I was doing. So yeah, it was just awesome environment, and I really liked being able to get back out racing because it had been about a year since I had done any sort of racing. So yeah, that was definitely what got me into it was that first 70.3 Waco.
Cool. Yeah. And then it was May of 2022 that we started working together. And when we talked that first time, you had 70.3 Muncie on the calendar and Ironman Arizona on the calendar. So planning to do your first Ironman with 70.3 Muncie between when we started working together and that goal. And as soon as we first started working together, it was very clear to me that you had a lot of potential as an athlete. Given that your sort of hodgepodge training leading into Waco resulted in what it did, still going sub 5:30, and it was really clear that you had the most opportunity for improvement on the run, but you still hadn't done a whole lot of structured bike training. So we spent a lot of time just getting into that kind of structured training, and just nailing the consistency over the course of those few months in the lead up to Muncie. And then we really started to like get to see a glimpse into that potential at Muncie. You went 4:31 that day in Muncie in 2022. Like now riding 2:21 and then running 1:36 off the bike, which I thought was, I mean, it was very much to your potential. You ran really hard that race, stayed really consistent throughout the race, and I was really stoked. I think you were really stoked with that result, given that within, I don't know, about a year's time, you had gone from running 2 hours off the bike to down into that mid 130s range. So yeah, going 4:31 in that second 70.3 was when we really started to see that glimpse into what your potential was, and then jump straight into the Ironman block. And yeah, you ended up having a like pretty solid result at Ironman Arizona, but maybe a little bit of a different kind of race experience. Do you want to just like talk a little bit about what it felt like to race that first Ironman, how it ended up going? Talk through that the swim bike run a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Arizona was it was definitely a good experience and probably one of the hardest races I've had. Yeah, it was yeah, I mean the swim and everything was totally fine. I think I swam at the right effort level that is needed for an Ironman. And obviously with the swimming background, wasn't too worried about it. The bike went solid. I don't think we had like any major crashes on the bike in terms of power or anything. So yeah, that was pretty solid. Stayed on nutrition and everything for the bike too, which was good. And then the run was where it kind of took a turn for the worst. Yeah, felt good for probably about half of it, and just totally crashed, totally bonked. Didn't really have anything left in the legs, and it was kind of survival mode to the end. But it was also my first marathon, so that's probably not the best way or the smartest way to do it. First marathon at the tail end of an Ironman, but it was definitely a humbling experience, and kind of I feel like it showed a lot more of what we had to work on to improve. Even with going down back to the 70.3 distances, it was still very clear that the run was kind of the weak point. So yeah, it was definitely good overall.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember that day tracking you at Ironman Arizona and just like slowly seeing the spiral happen on the run. But I was just really excited to for the perspective that you came out of that race, and really every race that we've worked together through. You always have this really positive mindset, and you bring like this outlook about what is it that I can do better next time. And I really think that that mindset is something that has informed my ability to coach you in this like in the way that I have, and just like how you've been able to continue to succeed at all of these different races. So yeah, just running through it quickly, then 2023, you did 70.3 Chattanooga and 70.3 Boulder. The Boulder race like ended up being like a post 70.3 Chattanooga, like let's sign up for this one because Chattanooga didn't quite go as you had hoped. But yeah, there was also this other impending thing on the calendar in 2023, which was a departure for Korea for 9 months. So yeah, when you gave me that, or yeah, when you let me know that you were going to be leaving for Korea for 9 months, I like, my first like thought was, I wonder what's up with James in triathlon. Like, is he just going to go away for 9 months and then we'll like start again? But yeah, 70.3 Chattanooga and 70.3 Boulder were both very successful races for different reasons, but not quite executed to your potential. Again, just like leaving a little bit left on the run, I think. But this departure for Korea, you're like, oh no, man, I'm absolutely in. I don't really think that I'll be able to swim a whole lot, but I'm ready to keep training through all of it. And so, it really just, became apparent that we could spend a lot of time working on the run. But can you tell me a little bit about like, yeah, so you're leaving for Korea in the middle of June with plans of coming back in February. Like during that time, like you did face some unique training challenges. You want to talk a little bit through like what some of the challenges of training in Korea were, and how you were able to remain consistent throughout those 9 months that you were gone?
Yeah. I think the first and most obvious thing that comes to mind in terms of challenges was there was no pool. So it was, 8 or 9 months of just no swimming at all, which was definitely not ideal, but I think we both knew that the most important thing to improve on during that time was the run. So I think it might've been kind of a blessing in disguise to kind of put the swim on the back burner because just have such a good background in it that I don't think we really needed to improve on it too much. And then, yeah, just focused a lot on running. But yeah, I was definitely pretty lucky with being able to stay consistent with training. We didn't really have too much going on. And yeah, I mean, running is pretty easy. You can just do it wherever. So that was definitely nice. And then in terms of biking, bought a bike out there and, cheap trainer off of Amazon and just brought the power pedals. Yeah, ran Zwift off the laptop. So that was definitely nice. And I could just do that in the room. So it was easy and always accessible. But yeah, we did have like a few different training exercises that we had to go out and do. So, it's taken like 2 weeks without being able to be on the bike, or, 2 weeks where I was only able to run on treadmills, which was pretty brutal, especially in a big run block, just logging a bunch of treadmill miles. And then we also had a few times where we were out working like 12-hour shifts, just sitting in a room, which was not ideal. And then trying to go and get in like a little workout while also, trying to stay on top of sleep so I can still recover and do it again the next day. But yeah, it was, overall, it was probably the best training block we've ever had. Bumped the run mileage back from, I think we were only hitting around 25 to 30 when we were back here in Colorado. And I think we were pretty close to 40 for pretty much the whole 8 months. So I think that's, was key in, the big improvement on the run, and also incorporating, I think we were doing 2 speed workouts a week, one on the track and then one as a longer tempo day. So I think that got me a lot more comfortable with being able to run at faster paces and not having like form breakdown, and not just feeling like I was a little out of control on the run when I was running at faster paces. So.
And then just for context, you ran an hour and 20 minutes at St. George. So that's just to jump ahead there. I mean, that's a pretty remarkable improvement when one considers that course and the fact that, I mean, you essentially took 10 minutes plus off your 70.3 time with a run block. And a lot of people, when they try to do a run block, they get hurt or injured. What, did you run into any niggles, or how did you manage recovery? I know you mentioned sleep, which is, sort of like the core most important thing, but, What else? Did you do anything else to ensure recovery and that you would stay healthy?
Yeah, I was definitely doing a lot of stretching, and I was doing yoga probably 3 times a week, and then stretching after pretty much every run, and doing making sure I had a solid warm up, just so the body was feeling loose and ready to go, especially when tackling the speed workouts. But yeah, we did run into we were planning to do a marathon while I was out there, and ran into some tendonitis when we were, I want to say, 3 weeks out or maybe 4 weeks out from it. So didn't start that. We opted to do a half marathon, like time trial kind of deal on my own, which was pretty brutal to just run a half marathon all out on my own. Definitely don't recommend it. It was pretty rough. But yeah, it was still ran a PR, ran like a 125, I think. But yeah, you never know. It could have been better if I had other people there with me. But yeah, so just a lot of stretching and a lot of yoga to help with injury prevention.
Yeah, and that, I mean, one thing that I think that half marathon time trial that we did, like, because you'd been putting in, like you said, 40 miles, we peaked at 50 miles, doing this kind of marathon block, training for the Seoul marathon, which didn't end up happening. But from my perspective as a coach, and I know that this like isn't necessarily what everyone needs, and I know that you specifically as an athlete, you're the kind of person who can just like put your nose to the grindstone and keep training despite not having carrots to chase. But that was a little bit of like why we had something there on the calendar. It was like you were going to be gone for 9 months, you're going to be training like just with your head down. And so, yeah, trying to get something on the calendar, and then that didn't happen. But also the half marathon time trial, like I think it gave you just a little bit of confidence and a little bit of belief in your potential. Something that I think that running 120 off the bike last weekend also is just continuing to give you, is that you can do that. And not only can you do that, but you definitely can go faster just as we continue to like put in some really intentional work and effort. So yeah, the 125 in Korea by yourself was probably not the most enjoyable experience, but I'm glad that you were able to execute that despite the adversity of having to do it alone and not being able to like race the marathon that we had set out for. But yeah, great. Well, I want to take a little bit of time to talk through this, this St. George race that you won last weekend. But yeah, so just, like chatting a little bit about, like this return from Korea. You landed on February 16th, I think, or February 15th, immediately moved into a new apartment, had to like, I don't know, get set up in a new place, like buy a chair, I think is what you said. You like didn't have very much to move, but yeah, you had to move into a new place. And then February 19th marked like 11 weeks before St. George, which we didn't actually have on the calendar right off the bat. 70.3 Boulder was going to be the first race. But we decided to put St. George on the calendar as well, just because of some of the goals that you had and just an opportunity to race again. Yeah, like dust off the cobwebs and make sure that everything was ready and firing for 70.3 Boulder. But yeah, 11 weeks from being back in Colorado, you had to get back acclimated to altitude, get back to swimming for the first time. But yeah, because of just the amount of consistency that you were able to put in over that entire block in Korea, it allowed you to jump straight in, and you were doing 16 hours a week for those, like an average of 16 hours a week, like peaking around 20 for those 11 weeks leading into St. George, averaging right around 40 miles a week on the run, peaking at 45. So yeah, just like all of that foundation was so solid from the time that you were in Korea that led into this race in St. George. So yeah, you put in tons of work. Yeah, we're just like riding 10 to 12 hours a week a lot of times over that time. But then we're getting really close to St. George. you and I have a chat last week, just about what the plan is going into the race. You want to walk me through like what the strategy was before race day. What your intention was going into the race. Just walk me through it.
So strategy for the swim, pretty much just stay with front pack. I feel like there's not a whole lot of time that can be made up on the swim because it's just such a short part of the race. So yeah, just staying with the front pack as best I can. And then going onto the bike, we've definitely had some issues with over biking in the past. So the plan was to be around like 280 watts on basically until Snow Canyon, and then up Snow Canyon, pushing up closer to like 300. I think on some of the steeper climbs, it was getting to where I was around like 330. And then, you know, it's kind of like kind of rolling for a little bit. So it's kind of like pushing over 300 up on the ups, and then on the downs and the little flat, kind of like false flat sections, was back down closer to 280. And then the plan for the run. So it was starting out at like 640 was the plan. Since it's basically like 2 miles uphill on the way out, and then doing a little loops through the golf course and then downhill on the way back. So the plan was to start out around 640 pace, which didn't really follow that. Definitely got a little eager, which I guess was in the end not a bad thing. But yeah, came off the bike and saw the dude that was ahead of me, and I was like, well, I guess we'll try to catch him and hang on to his pace for a little bit. And yeah, it just felt super solid, and I could tell that he was kind of hurting on one of the out and backs. So then on the 2 miles down, I kind of like came up next to him, and then I was like, well, I guess we'll see what we have left in the tank for the second loop, and just trying to help hold that pace, and ended up working pretty well. So.
So,
yeah. I was just going to say, yeah, like we knew that you had overbiked basically at Chattanooga and Boulder, and that had led to you running 131 at Chattanooga, 142 in Boulder, like pretty rough day. But yeah, so we knew you had overbiked, and it was just like, okay, like we're going to give you a little bit of like an easier power target on the bike because we want your legs to feel fresh for the run. And yeah, those low sixes, it felt really good in training, but weren't really sure about how you'd feel coming off the bike. And it's clear that the low sixes was exactly like where you felt good when your legs were fresh coming off the bike. And so, yeah, I think that the strategy of just letting some of the guys ride past you, or maybe one of the guys ride past you and just let them go, ended up resulting in you being able to run to your potential and really just, like pull back the curtain on what that potential for what you could run on the day really was. But yeah, so it took some risks on the run and they definitely paid off. Conrad.
I was just gonna break down the run. So that's 6:06 pace with a, pretty hefty elevation gain throughout the race. And what were conditions like? Was it hot? Was it cool? What was the run like?
It definitely got a little hot in the second loop. But yeah, the wind was supposed to pick up, but it didn't really pick up. So yeah, just got a little hot in the second loop, but the first loop was super nice. Still really good weather.
So when we think about other adjustments that you made, I know that nutrition is something that we've been focusing on as a team. Obviously we just had nutrition month and things like that, but, can you break down your fueling plan during the race? And then maybe we can even talk about sort of pre-race.
So, morning of the race, my go-to breakfast is just 3 English muffins with some honey. And then have like 2 cups of coffee usually. And then before the race, I sipped on some, a bottle that had the precision fuel and hydration, 60 grams carbs, 1,000 milligram sodium mix in it. So I sipped on that for the next probably, I don't know, hour and a half, 2 hours. And then about 20 minutes before, I had a caffeine gel, Science and Sport caffeine gel. And then right after the swim, when I was running into transition, I had a precision gel. So I think those are like 30 grams of carbs. And then on the bike, I had two bottles that had the 60 carb mix with precision. And then I had another caffeine gel on the bike and another normal precision gel. And then on the run, I carried a bottle that had just electrolytes in it, 1,000 milligram sodium. And I had a precision 30 gram carb gel and two caffeine gels. I think that was everything.
Got it. So on the bike, you said you had two bottles. Were they liter bottles?
No, I think they're
smaller, a little bit smaller. Like
yeah, they're a little smaller. I think 750 milliliters.
So not a massive amount of fluid, sounds like, but it sounds like you were well hydrated before. So preloaded well. And I know that, you know, it's dry. It's potentially easier to stay cool, maybe, at a race like St. George. How was the temp coming out of the water?
It was still probably in like the 60s, I think, coming out of the water. So I didn't really have too much of a problem with keeping cool. I did, when we got to the top of Snow Canyon Climb, I did grab a bottle and took a few sips and then just dumped the rest of it on me so I could get nice and cool on the descent and be ready for the run.
Nice. So what does that come out, shake out to? Around 100 grams of carbs per hour or so, maybe a little bit more. Got it. And shout out to Precision Fuel and Hydration. They obviously make some great stuff, and it sounds like you like it.
Yeah, definitely. I started like testing it out, I think like a month and a half out from the race, and I really liked it, and it sat well with my stomach, and I didn't really have any issues with running off the bike after taking in, you know, around the 100 grams of carb per hour mark. So yeah, definitely stuck with it.
And then, you know, the other thing to point out, you said three English muffins with with honey, and you know, that's a fair amount, and I'm sure you practiced that before the race.
Yeah,
you know, the best place to store carbs, if you can, it's in your body, so that's why preloading is important. And you know, obviously, you drank the sports drink and had a solid volume of fluid and electrolytes beforehand, and that sets you up well for success. I think a lot of athletes, they focus obsessively over the sort of the intra race nutrition, and then they forget about, you know, sort of like the pre-race fueling, even the day before, you know, leaning into the carbs, carb loading, and then paying attention to everything for breakfast. And so you said you had basically two gels, right? Before the race. Was that what you said?
I just had one. Yeah, just
got it.
Yeah.
And then, but you had one in your pocket coming out of the swim that you like took into transition.
Yeah. I just had one tucked in the tri suit. And once I pulled down the wetsuit, just ripped it out and took it out. Took it while I was running to the bike.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's an approach. You can juggle that. That's that's another good way to sneak in 30 grams of carbs. A lot of people might drop that or fumble or something, but that's good.
So James, I know that like basically over the course of the last probably 18 months or so, you've like just in starting to get more serious about competing in these races, and you've made some equipment upgrades. You want to like talk about like, yeah, what equipment you were using specifically on the bike, but yeah, also like what shoes are you running in, all that kind of stuff. Like what's some of the equipment that you were running on race day?
I got the Quintana Roo VPR. That's the bike. And then I have the Premier Wheels disc. So that was a bike setup. Got Physique cycling shoes. I don't remember exactly which model they're called. They got funky names. But yeah, and then on the run, I was wearing the Asics Metaspeed Edge. And those shoes have just been working for me. I feel like most carbon shoes kind of really bother my ankles when I get up towards like the 10 mile mark, but these ones have worked really well for me. I have no pain really running in them. So.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. All really solid equipment choices. And I know that you've got the Rudy Wing helmet,
Yeah.
some of the like most aerodynamic choices for sure. Well, just like backing up a little bit before the race, like we talked through the race plan. We had some goals going into the race for sure, but like what, like inside your head, maybe outside of our conversations, like what were your expectations going into race day? Like, how were you feeling? Like, what did you think was possible? And yeah, like what was gonna help you feel successful on race day?
So from our conversation, I remember that I told you I was definitely feeling more prepared than I ever have for a race. And I'm pretty sure I also said that I felt like I could surprise us on the run, which definitely ended up happening. But yeah, I didn't really know what to expect coming into this race just from having so much time that I had gone without really testing myself or having any kind of race. I've had a feeling that it was going to be a little rusty, especially like in the transitions and everything. So I was kind of just was in the mindset of like going out and just doing my own thing, not really trying to get too caught up in the actual race, just because I think that's part of what led to me over biking in the past was like see someone go by me and I'm like, oh yeah, I could definitely hang on to them. So yeah, I just kind of went into it trying to do my own thing. And yeah, it definitely just kind of worked out. I didn't really try to chase people when I knew that I couldn't, which I think was definitely huge for feeling good in the end of the race.
Yeah, nice. And so I know that you said to me after the race that when you got into T2, you're like, well, there's not really any bikes here, so I know things are going pretty well. But at what point did you like, at what point, if any, did you realize that you were like in the lead in the amateur race, or like, yeah, where you were at, relative to your competitors on course?
Yeah, so my dad was there and he was giving me some time gaps. So I knew coming out of transition that was the guy, like the only dude that was ahead of me. So that was definitely nice. And I kind of just knew from then on that like if I'm at least ahead of him, then I'm at least leading the race. You never really know with people that started later. So I think there was like one dude that ran like a 117 or something and passed a bunch of people and luckily ran fast enough to not get beat by him, but I don't think I saw him once on the course. So yeah, I knew that I was leading the race on the second loop when I saw my dad and he obviously told me. But again, like had no clue how fast other people were running that had started later than me on the swim. So it was still just kind of all right, maybe leading now, but still gotta, keep the foot on the gas and just don't let up until crossing the finish line. So.
Yeah, and that guy ended up running a 117, but from like just scrolling through the tracker, it seemed like in the age group field, your like 120 was the second fastest age group run on the day, which yeah, just yeah, is exactly what you needed in order to keep that guy away. So awesome. And like, so then you crossed the finish line. At what point did you realize that you had in fact like won the race overall? And like, what goes through your head when you did?
Yeah, I mean, crossing the finish line, I was honestly just happy to be done because that last like mile and a half, even though it was downhill, I was kind of sucking by the end there. But yeah, so like obviously the announcer said that it was the first amateur to cross the line. So I was like, okay, might have won, but like you don't really know, still got to wait for the tracker to update and stuff. So I kind of just like made my way through, just hobbling over to where I saw my dad, and yeah, he was like, "You won." I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." But yeah, and then the tracker kept updating, and once it gets to a certain point, it's like, all right, no one's probably gonna squeeze by me at this point, and I don't know. It was like, obviously it was super proud moment. And I don't know. It just kind of felt like all the work we'd put in finally paid off. And but yeah, I was just super proud to have finally put together a race that I was like genuinely proud of. And like, obviously I was still thinking of a few things I could have done better, but I feel like that's going to happen no matter what. But yeah, I was just super proud and happy that I finally have put something together that I was proud of, with really no major issues, whether it be mechanical or something just going wrong with the body and totally bonking. So.
Yeah, and I mean that's an interesting thing to touch on is we went through Waco, Muncie, Arizona, Chattanooga, Boulder. Like that was five races when yeah, there were some things that like that did go wrong. Mechanical issues in Chattanooga, like overbiking a couple of times and really like yeah, the race in St. George was like executed to essentially the best of your ability. You know, there wasn't really anything else that you could have done on the day. Like maybe a few small things for sure, but yeah, I'm sure that just executing a really good race and an awesome swim bike run combo just felt really good. One more question just related to the win, like how does like you taking the overall win at St. George like compare to like where you thought you'd be when you crossed the finish line at Waco? Like, did you ever think ahead of time, like, I think I could be good enough at this to like win a race overall? Like, when did you like feel like that was a possibility?
Yeah, I definitely was not feeling that after Waco with how that went. Yeah, like if you had told me, hey, in like 3 years you're gonna, run 30 minutes or 40 minutes faster than this, I'd been like, all right, sure. Like, no way that's gonna happen. Yeah, I honestly like I don't think either of us really went into this thinking that this would happen. Like, I truly didn't think that I was gonna have really any chance of winning. I don't know. It was definitely a surprise. I don't think I really came to the realization that it would be possible until the second lap of the run when I was, leading and I still felt pretty solid.
Nice. Well, I mean, I alluded to this earlier, but we added St. George onto the calendar because at some point while you were in Korea is when we had a conversation about how you were interested in trying to qualify for your pro card. And so we threw St. George on the calendar as an opportunity, like I said, to dust off cobwebs, make sure that you were in like prime firing, like ready to go, and had the opportunity to race again after almost 12 months at Boulder. So yeah, throwing this race on the calendar, you had the opportunity to do it in St. George and like yeah, absolutely crushed it. So you've got 70.3 Boulder coming up on the calendar. But yeah, like what's really next, like in the short term, in the long term, in terms of like goals and what you're really thinking, do you know?
Yeah, I mean, short term, obviously Boulder. Hopefully we can go there and just execute well again and see what happens. But after that, I think I would like to do another full because I want to have one that I'm, proud of. Not to say that Arizona wasn't a decent race, but I definitely think there's a lot of room to improve, and I think it would be fun with all the improved running fitness to see how we would do in a full. And then World Champs in New Zealand this year. That'll be fun. My sister and brother-in-law are both doing it, so it'd be a nice family trip. But yeah, then after that, I'm not too sure. We kind of talked a little bit about taking the pro card, but I think that's one of those things where it'll kind of be if we feel like I'm ready to do so, then we'll do it. But yeah, I think that's something that we'll have to sit on for a while and kind of see where we're at towards the end of the year. See where the fitness is and see if we think I'm ready.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like you said, and it's essentially the first time that you've executed a race really well. And so, yeah, seeing what you're capable of when you do execute a race really well and competing with the top age group field, like I know that that just feels really fun and exciting too. So if that's what like keeps you coming back and feeling motivated, then yeah, I think that that's a great thing to be able to continue to do for a little while. And yeah, making that decision down the line, about whether or not and when to take the pro card, yeah, is like definitely the right thing to do. So one more question that I have for you, like over the last, let's say 11 months since 70.3 Boulder, you go to Korea, you come back, get into this block, like at what point did you ever feel like a drop in motivation, like it was too much of a grind, like yeah, like because from my perspective looking at Training Peaks, like you are the guy who turns things green, you know, and if they're not green it's because you a little bit longer in zone two, just to like continue to get the volume in, but like so it doesn't stand out to me that you are the kind of person who loses motivation. But yeah, tell me about like if that did in fact happen and what you did to push through it.
Yeah, definitely. There were definitely some low points in Korea. Like, I don't know, I'd say the first few months was pretty excited to get after training. Just 'cause I was just looking forward to the next year. And then I feel like once you kind of get into that grind for a few months, I don't want to say it became like repetitive, but it was kind of just kept getting into my mind that, oh, hey, there's 6 more months until I have really any chance to show what I've been working towards. And then we'd planned on doing the marathon, and I feel like I got a lot more motivation again to keep it going, and then got hurt, which was not great. So that was definitely another low point. And then I don't know, I feel like as the time in Korea was coming to an end, I kept like gaining motivation and just feeling more excited for what was to come, because it was like, okay, this is like, I'm going back to Colorado soon, and then once I get back there, it's like 4 months or 2 months, 3 months until potentially St. George or Boulder. So yeah, it was definitely a little up and down while we were in Korea, and then once we got back to Colorado, it was definitely like full gas, like super amped to be back and able to like ride outside again. Yeah, so it was definitely just super amped to be back in Colorado and looking forward to what was ahead.
Cool. Well, yeah, man, congrats again. I couldn't be more stoked for you. And yeah, I had such a blast over the course of the last 9 months seeing all this work you're putting in, and then especially on Saturday seeing it come to fruition. So yeah, just like couldn't be more excited for you and more excited for what's to come. You got a lot more things on the calendar and a lot more potential. So really excited about it. Conrad, you got anything else?
No, I mean, just congrats. It is good evidence that if you really take the time to focus on improving a discipline, you can really, really move the needle. And sometimes that's what it takes. You need to do a block of a very heavily focused block. I mean, we're seeing many athletes kind of move the needle in the swim, especially those wanting to take their pro card. Obviously, you have the benefit and the luxury of having that swim, which is becoming more and more important at the pro level. So that's an excellent kind of requisite ability before you move up. But just congrats on staying healthy and turning a weakness into, an approaching elite level performance on the run. And I think it's good evidence that you have the engine to do extremely well. And I'm excited to continue following your journey. Obviously, it's easy for me to follow since I'm part of Working Triathlete. But I don't know if you have social media or anything like that. But I mean, if athletes want to follow you, let us know. Do you have an Instagram or anything like that?
Yes, I am on Instagram. It's just James Bilbrey. That is the username right there.
Yeah. And if any listeners have any questions for you or for Derek, they can feel free to email info@workingtriathlete.com and we'll forward them or figure out, you know, how to get those, how to connect you guys. But, and if anybody is interested in coaching or learning more about Working Triathlete, head over to our website, workingtriathlete.com. You could submit a form, or just email us info@workingtriathlete.com. But thanks for hopping on, guys. It was a fun chat and a lot of big things on the horizon.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.